joined again this week on The Green by contributor Larry Nagengast, who brings us this week part two of his look at education advocacy in the First State, specifically looking this week at what's going on now in terms of advocacy for educational change here in Delaware. Larry, we appreciate you joining us again on The Green this week.
Once again, glad to be here, Tom.
And this is a great follow-up to last week's look at the education funding lawsuit settlement. That was a big moment for education advocates, but you found that the celebration may be a bit limited. Why is that?
Well, as we discussed last week, the mediation settlement is a big deal, but it still requires Governor Carney to make specific proposals to the General Assembly and for the legislators to approve those proposals. And there's also a strong sentiment among some of the reform advocates that this agreement just really doesn't go far enough. So while it's true that the settlement represents a major win for the people who have been challenging the status quo since the 1970s, it's still too soon for the proponents of change to be taking a victory lap. And as we move forward, the advocacy baton is being handed off to a new generation of change agents.
And before we start talking about that new generation of change agents, when you talked about people working on these education issues here in Delaware, in your piece you split them into two categories, grassroots and grass tops. What's the distinction?
Now, the grassroots are the people who are working at ground level, at the school and community level, the folks who see the problems that children and their families face every day but have only limited resources to generate the solutions. Now, the grass tops, and that's a term that Paul Herdman at Rodell used when I was speaking with him, the grass tops are the people who are presumed to have power and influence, the leaders in the business and nonprofit communities who are committing themselves to finding solutions. These are the people who serve on what seems to be this never-ending series of task forces that analyze school problems and funding issues, but no matter what they propose, their recommendations are seldom implemented.
Let's talk about some of the groups that are now working in this realm and that are relatively new. But before we look at them, is there a reason why we're starting to see some of these new groups pop up?
Well, you know, there's no single reason, and I wouldn't necessarily say that one of those reasons is desperation. But there is certainly a feeling that something different needs to be done. Someone said, you know, if you keep on doing the same thing over and over again, then you're not getting any change. Well, yeah, you better do something different. So anyhow, for instance, let's look at how the distribution of wealth has changed in the country in the past generation. Look at the political divisiveness in the country over the last 4 years. Look at the growth of the Black Lives Matter movement and the broader acceptance that that movement has received. These are all touch points in the recognition that the old ways aren't working, so we have to try something different. What's also interesting here is that there's a feeling among some in the grassroots sector that the system doesn't allow their voices to be heard, but the influential people among the grass tops are saying that they need these grassroots voices to shout loud and clear in order to convince the power structures that changes are needed now.
All right, so let's take a look at some of these specific groups that you talked about in your piece, starting with First State Educate. Who are they, and what are they trying to accomplish?
Well, First State Educate is an interesting operation. It's got this grass tops pedigree. It has a board of directors and an executive director that have connections to the banking industry, to the state's largest philanthropy, and to the DuPont family. And while its goal is to seek major education policy changes, finance reform, changing the referendum system, and creating something called innovation zones within school districts, its approach to securing these changes is to empower the disenfranchised by building and training networks of advocates, primarily in minority and low-income communities, to be the voices of change.
Another group we've heard from fairly frequently over the last couple of years is one called Delaware Can. How about them? What do we know about them? What are they doing?
Okay, Delaware CAN. Now, that's an acronym. CAN is an acronym for Campaign for Achievement Now, and it takes a similar approach, but it seems to be working more at the ground level. It's been around for about 3.5 years. It has a contact list of more than 3,500 people, and it has already trained more than 175 parents and high school students on the basics of advocacy techniques. Delaware CAN is part of a larger national organization that puts an emphasis on politics. paying attention to school board elections and staying in touch with your state legislators. While it is certainly interested in Delaware's big picture issues, like school funding reform, it is concentrating more on the school and the district level, supporting parents and students as they interact with principals and school board members on these more day-to-day issues.
Now, both of these groups are also part of Education Equity Delaware, which brings together a lot of different groups under its umbrella. What is its role in pursuing education advocacy in Delaware?
Well, Education Equity Delaware, it really looks like, you know, your classic Delaware Way umbrella group. It's a big tent that includes the Chamber of Commerce and the ACLU, big players like the Urban League and Rodell, and 10 organizations whose primary interest is the state's Latino community. As you might expect, it got its start 4 years ago as an outgrowth of one of these many school finance reform task forces. Now, the breadth of this coalition would seem to give it great influence, but that really hasn't happened yet. It is a forum for a spectrum of leaders to talk about reform, but it has yet to prove that it can move the General Assembly and the governor to get away from the status quo.
So we've talked a lot about these kind of new groups, these umbrella groups, but there's also kind of the classic groups, right? The state and local PTAs. Where do they fit into this equation? And you know, it doesn't seem like we hear very much from them at this juncture. Is there a reason for that?
Well, you know, the PTA is still seen by many people as being like the fundraising arm of local schools, the group that sells cookies and gift wrap and uses the proceeds to buy things that aren't in the principal's budget and does nice things like taking the teachers out to lunch or, you know, stuff like that. And yet the PTA does take stands on important school issues, things like bullying and institutional racism, school safety, for example. But it tends not to get drawn into debates. You know, the Delaware PTA's big government issue these days is an effort to reduce the term length of school board members from 5 years to four. Now, that's an interesting item within the education community because it's feeling that shorter terms would get more people interested in running for the school board, but it's still hardly a hot-button issue. Nonetheless, the PTA has a reputation for stability and for supporting education, and state officials do often look to the PTA when they've got seats on task forces and commissions that they want to fill with someone who can provide a parental voice.
So how about parents who, say, aren't interested in these larger organized efforts or some of these bigger picture issues, maybe just the smaller individual issues that, affect their kids in their individual schools? Can they move the ball on issues or perhaps be eventually pulled into bigger roles and some of these other things that we've been talking about?
Well, you know, your observation hints at one reality that several of my contacts mentioned. Parents tend to get involved in school affairs when there's a particular issue that involves their child. And now we're seeing some of that this year, maybe more than usual. You know, in the spring and the summer, with the following a lot of the activity in the Black Lives Matter movement. Now, there was some controversy over whether schools should continue to keep a police presence in their buildings through these school resource officers. And then with the school reopening plans, there have been protests in both the Appaquinimink and Red Clay districts, and probably some others, about whether schools are opening fast enough or whether they should be taking a more cautious approach. Now, the use of social media, Facebook, and various petition platforms has helped bring people together more easily. Now, it's not clear yet whether these groups will remain standing after the controversies that triggered their launches die down, but the parents I talked to did say that they expect to remain involved in school affairs. And, you know, whether these parents are staying in a group or if they're working on their own, that is still a good sign.
And I suppose it also matters whether or not they have success, whether they're able to engage their school board or their superintendent and get some results, if it's going to keep them engaged. If they run into a brick wall, maybe not so much.
Yeah, you're right. You're right about that. And I know the group that started in Red Clay over the reopening issue, they did get the school board to consider a few more alternatives, different ways of doing things, broadening the options for parents. So that is a sign of success. Of course, one of the challenges that particular group has, and it's a case whenever you get a controversial issue, is that parents can be all over the map on a particular topic, and it, certainly with the reopening, some people want the schools to open fully right away. Others are saying more cautious approach. This Red Clay interest group has people from both sides of the fence and places in between involved. So it's going to be kind of interesting to see as they move forward whether they stick together or break off, because you know it's hard to have an interest group when you've got a lot of competing interests involved.
So let's pull back a little bit here. And as you look at the landscape of groups trying to bring about some change here in Delaware and where the process stands right now in the wake of the lawsuit settlement and more coming soon from the Reading Consortium, is there enough momentum to really start getting some things done? Does this moment feel a little bit different than maybe previous moments that we talked about 2 weeks ago?
Well, you know, it does feel different, but I think that that's also a matter of timing. And, you know, maybe we should get together and talk about it again after June 30th of next year. Now, it's different now because elections are just a little bit more than a week away, and significant changes in the composition of Delaware's General Assembly are sure to follow. Talk about those changes, what they'll be and what impact they might have, is likely to continue until the legislators convene in January. And then we know there's going to be pressure on the lawmakers to pass new laws and to approve the new spending that put the lawsuit's settlement into effect. So now there's a larger question, and that is, how long can this momentum last? Organizing is difficult, as anyone has ever tried it can attest, and keeping groups organized is just an ongoing challenge. It's especially challenging to organize around legislative issues in a state like Delaware, where the lawmakers meet from January to June, and then they take 6 months off. You know, so there's this on-again, off-again nature in our political cycle that makes it harder for interest groups to sustain momentum. So, yes, it does feel a little bit different now, but the big question is, will we still feel the difference next June or even this time next year?
All right, Nangas, as always, we appreciate your comprehensive reporting, especially in education issues. Thanks for being with us on The Green again this week.
You're quite welcome, Tom.